CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time in the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, May 3rd, 2024. Here's a headline in the newspaper today. ladies and gentlemen, the New York Times, and this has got to be the weakest, wimpiest headline of all time. All right. So it's in the aftermath of the protest at Columbia University in New York, and I urge everybody to check out my conversation with Ray Hanania. We took the deep dive in that one on Friday. Here's the headline. Winners and losers of the Columbia protests? ? History will tell. Oh, way to take a stand, New York. History will tell. We're going to duck this one. Man, that's like a J.B. Pritzker response to a question, a duck and a dodge. That's what we called him, J.B. Travolta for years, and Sugar Ray Pritzker, because he's quick on his feet. Actually, Ray Hanania, my good friend, and came on the show earlier today. He's pretty Pritzker-like when he doesn't want to answer a question. But this was ridiculous, New York Times. Take us, history will tell. It actually doesn't really tell. That's like something else. It's open to the interpretation of who's ever reviewing the historical record. For instance, we talked about this with Ray again. There was an essay, Jeff Greenfield wrote this essay about a protest, anti-war protest in the 60s and how it worked to the advantage of Nixon and George Wallace, et cetera, and so forth. He said, the public is never happy with protests. It makes it feel uncomfortable. And I just feel compelled one more time to point out that MAGA loves the insurrection. So it's not a uniform point of view. So there's some people who love protests, some people who love, absolutely love challenging the status quo, if you will. I don't think that's a universal. New York Times, come on, man, just take a stand. Doesn't ask my history will tell. All right, without further ado, I'm going to bring on my distinguished guest who's very patiently waiting. History will tell whether this is one of the greatest podcast episodes of all time. I think history will say yes, it is, because my distinguished guest knows his stuff. Take it away, distinguished guest, and introduce yourself.
Hi, Ben. This is Moise Bouani, Chicago public school teacher, English teacher, also coach, coming off of a disappointing 3-7 season, but it's not about wins or losses, it's about the memories we made along the way. And I would never trade a second of coaching in CPS. It's an absolute joy. Happy to be here.
He's also, in my opinion, the most knowledgeable, in my opinion, a football person I know in the city of Chicago. And you go, how could a football coach, how could an English teacher know anything about football? Marv Levy, ever heard of him, ladies and gentlemen? Four-time Super Bowl coach for the Buffalo Bills, was an English teacher when he began his career. I'm not sure if he taught Moise for the Chicago Public Schools. I know he attended a Chicago public school. For 10 trivia points, Moise Bouani, don't look it up on your phone. What high school DeMar Levy's like, what? What high school did Marv Levy graduate from? Go.
Oh, man. This is a tough one. I'm going to go ahead and say Schurz. Let's just say Schurz for some reason.
Well, you have the right first consonant. It's South Shore High School.
South Shore. Okay. I thought you were going to say Steinmetz for a second. I was like, oh, man.
No. South Shore High School. Back in the day when South Shore was east of where it is now. All right, without further, let's get down to business. Wheeze comes on the show to talk Bears, all things football. And occasionally we go into politics. I don't think we'll find our way to politics. There's so much to discuss on the football side of things. So let me just say this right now before we begin. This we've been talking a lot on this show about the Bear publicly financing a Bear stadium. Everybody listens to the show know I'm vehemently against it, and I'm asking Mayor Johnson to quietly drop the idea, just pretend it didn't happen, because there's no political leverage for him at all in this, and the people who he thinks he's winning the support of are actually going to turn against him. I've already turned against him, so you're never going to win over the Cranes crowd with this proposal, Mayor Johnson. So don't listen to your advisors. Listen to me. Drop the idea. Let the Bears go to Arlington Heights or put them on at 87th Street and then win the accolades of lefties for doing that. But we're not going to talk about that in particular. We're going to be talking about the Bears draft and what it says about the future of the Chicago Bears. There is a connection, because the better the Bears do, the more likely it is that the public might get behind forking over public dollars to the Bears for their stadium. I say there's a chance that might happen. It didn't happen in Kansas City. As Moise knows, Kansas City Chiefs were victorious in this year's Super Bowl. They're the greatest quarterback in the NFL right now. See if Moise agrees with me on that. And Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes endorsed a referendum that the voters in Kansas City had on financing their stadium. And guess what? The voters of Kansas City sacked that referendum, if I could use a football metaphor. They rejected it, despite the fact that Patrick Mahomes endorsed it. So it doesn't always equate success on the field with public being stupid and giving money to football gazillionaire owners who don't need it. All right, Luis, anything you want to add to that, or you want to move on to the football part?
Yeah, no. Don't give public money to the Bears. Don't give public money to any private organization. The voters in Kansas City, they're enjoying football. They're in football heaven, and even they were like, nah, pass. It's wild, right? Like, I was trying to sit here and think of a third C, but I can only think of two right now. But the cops aren't going to love you, and Cranes won't love you, So why even try to win those crowds over? Everybody loves the renderings. This is great. That is great. But, we're still paying for the last renovation on Soldier Field. I think we're still at half a bill in the hole, right? It just makes no sense. And I think, when we make these ideological confusions, it just creates more issues amongst us. I remember the questionnaire of the mayors, and I remember the mayor, Mayor Johnson, saying no public money for the Bears during that time, and now all of a sudden things have changed. The entire process in itself was just like that day was such a it made me angry. Like, they started out with a prayer, about giving the Bears, getting the Bears to Super Bowl or getting the Bears more wins, and then building a stadium. And it's like, yeah, man, we have poor people in Chicago. We have people who are being forced out of Chicago. We also have kids who go to bed at night hungry. We have CPS students who are displaced. So really, really makes me think about, why I got into teaching and the idea of the city Chicago students deserve, and they don't deserve a city that's forking over money to an organization like the Bears while people are in struggles and while people are leaving the city who've lived here for a very long time, who happen to be Black and brown people. So I think it's a terrible idea. I know that they try to go to the state this week, I think last week, and even the governor, Speaker Welsh, were kind of like, this is a non-starter. So you know, I don't know if this is to, again, get Arlington Heights to play ball. I think it would make me really sad as a big time Brandon Johnson fan. Like, I love Brandon Johnson. You're never going to make me change my opinion on Brandon Johnson, because I knew the mayor before he became the mayor, and what a dude, what a person. And just like the mayor being present at that presentation, I was like, I don't know. And there are some other people present too, where I was like, I don't know why we're there. And in the same capacity, you know, the articles that have come out and pointed out, like, have y'all actually looked at the finances? And knowing these projects, once you sign off, once shovels hit the ground, they're always going to be way more expensive than the quote that they're giving you. Kevin Warren is not someone to take lightly in political spaces. You know, when we talk about ducking, diving, dodging, and, you know, not necessarily misleading, but almost every letter of the word mislead, except for maybe the last part of the D, is complete, he'll do that. He'll do that to get this stadium built. I love Chicago. I'm a lifelong Chicagoan. And what I notice right now is, you know, the same things that Black folks have had to endure in this city continues. We have new neighbors coming into the city and their conditions haven't gotten better. Where, you know, I'm not personally involved, but I know my union is bargaining really hard for a transformative contract. We need money for that. You know, also big congratulations to SEIU workers for getting their victories, our school support teams, and also, you know, UIC, UIUC workers that are fighting. We have a lot of people in the city who have been economically ignored, economically hurt, that need to be met first. It's about people, not about stadiums. The Bears can win a lot of Super Bowls like the folks in Kansas City have, and I still wouldn't give them a stadium. So let's turn that conversation off, I hope.
Yeah, by the way, and then while you're in that riff, it brought back a memory. I think I may have sent you this column I wrote. Maybe not. I can't remember. All the things I said. I'm always sending Mui stuff, mostly trash talking his favorite basketball teams. But he loves the Oklahoma City Thunder, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not sure why. Anyway, there.
You made me do what every single English teacher is afraid of: butting in and trying to interrupt someone. I'd never want to interrupt you, Ben. Or anyone. And I was at you because this is slander.
Sorry, I didn't.
My parents
are away thinking, here.
They're gonna live, my dad is gonna be like, how dare you? You can't come home.
You know? Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, so I probably did send you this column. So I wrote this column, I think it was 21 years ago, Mois. 21 years ago. And I was already well into my career. But 21 years ago, when the Bears got the public money to redo Soldier Field, I was against that. And I did a column where I was interviewing Chicago public school teachers, get their attitude about how we were investing money in the Bear. This is long before Karen Lewis took control of the union, ladies and gentlemen. The head of the union back in those days was very much part of, well, I don't know, actually at that time, it may have been Debbie Lynch, whatever it does. It was a totally different union than it is now. I was interviewing teachers, what they thought about them. Everyone to a T was outraged because they knew what a struggle was never going to raise, and they didn't ever had enough supplies, and they're chronically shortage of absolutely everything that matters in education as public school teachers in Chicago. And I interviewed this one young, just getting started in the business, I think it was history teacher at Senn High School, and his name was Jesse Sharkey. So there you go. Jesse Sharkey went on to head the Chicago Teachers. So anyway, that was my little reminiscence. All right. You mentioned something in your riff about Kansas City Chief fans in football heaven because their team was victorious in the Super Bowl. They got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time and Patrick Mahomes. They've won, I think, 3 Super Bowls in the last 5 years or something like that. An incredible run. And doesn't look like it's going to stop any time soon in terms of great runs. With this draft, are the Chicago Bears knocking on heaven's door, football heaven's door? Are they approaching Chief Country? Your thoughts, Mois?
I don't know. I mean, because, you know, everybody at the end of the draft, going into the draft, every amazing young person that is leaving the collegiate ranks to play football, everything is built on potential. We won't know. I'm a big believer in, you know, waiting 2-3 years before you assess a draft. It's really strange when people say these folks have won the draft. Yeah, on paper. You know, how does someone win the draft outside of just accumulating assets, maybe? That's my opinion. But when you draft, no one knows. You know, no one knows how it's going to turn out. That's why the draft is such a crapshoot. But I think, to kind of talk about this as like speculatory and talk about it because it's fun to engage in this, the Bears have a generational quarterback. But I will say this, I don't think Kansas City fans, I don't think a lot of people knew what Patrick Mahomes was going to be until he got there. And again, infrastructure is a big deal too, right? Kansas City had one of the best offensive minds sitting over there. They had a great quarterback in Alex Smith ready to talk to this guy about the game in Mahomes. So certain things are missing that the Bears don't have, but I do think they've set up a system really well. They have 3 number one receivers, 2 that are proven, 1 that they just drafted, who is a baller. You know, watching this guy in college in Rome Odunze, I was like, man, Larry Fitzgerald. And you look at the analytics behind him, like his route running, his ability to win, his ability to track the ball, ability to high point the ball. What an elite player. To be a little bit of a nerd about it, it's like imagining leaving the draft. You know, you got – imagine drafting, if we're doing a City Hall version of a draft, Jeanette Taylor and Rosana Rodriguez-Sanchez in the same draft. Man, you're set up for something amazing, right? That's what I feel like with Caleb Williams and Rome Odunze. You won't know until they play for – you know, a couple of years, and hopefully, you know, as a Bears fan, you hope these guys have incredibly long careers in that uniform. But the Bears, in many which ways, had a draft that's generational. You know, they turned a trade last year into assets that just don't stop accumulating. And one of those assets was the number one overall pick in the draft. And then with their own pick, the 9th, they got the 3rd best receiver, a receiver that you would argue is the best receiver in this draft, along with 2 other receivers, and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers from LSU. Marvin Harrison from Ohio State University, the son of Marvin Harrison Sr. Just in that nature, just having the 1st and 9th pick and landing that's incredible. And there was that little swagger because they did one of those like arrogant picks, or you know, people call it an arrogant pick when they picked the Aussie punter in the 4th round, who's considered like a generational punter. So leaving with the left tackle who's from Chicago, who, you know, could be a starting left tackle, a kid who's got some real assets also as a defensive end or rusher in the 5th round, trading back in. On paper, the Bears had a fantastic draft. And in an offseason where they landed, Keenan Allen, you know, coming off of a season where they had a defense that many would argue was a top 10 defense, they added some more assets that are quality depth pieces very quietly in Gerald Everett, a good running back in DeAndre Swift. You have to be feeling good if you're Ryan Poles, considering what he inherited. As a hater, someone wearing a Justin Fields shirt, not just inherited, but also proliferated to be able to get in this position to, you know, accumulate assets like this and execute a rebuild like this. But yeah, we'll see.
All right. We'll get into Justin Fields. And yes, Moise is wearing a Justin Fields t-shirt. And if you heard his last appearance in the show, it was like auld lang syne to Justin Fields. He gave his heartfelt thoughts about what a great quarterback Justin Fields is. And sorry, you can go listen to that one. We'll get it a little more Justin Fields. Seems like Pittsburgh is about to turn him into a kick returner. We'll get into it. I'm just telling you what the word is out of Pittsburgh. All right, let's talk about the number one pick that the Bears took this year. And ladies and gentlemen, it is luck. I always tell my main sport that I know is basketball. And I'm always talking to basketball geeks who years after a draft will assail my beloved Bulls for who they didn't draft. Okay, even though none of these so-called experts were wanting the Bulls to take these guys in real time. So just want to say, there's so much rewriting of history that goes on with a draft. And Moise was absolutely correct when he said you can only judge it in the aftermath. And then everybody who does will just pretend they knew this all along. It just makes stuff up as they go. Sports fans are notorious liars, ladies and gentlemen. All right. You just know that. There's not an honest sports fan in the world, except for me and Moise. All right. So anyway, the Bears got exceedingly lucky, to put it mildly. They traded last year's number one pick, with North Carolina, and to get their number one pick this year. And lo and behold, they were so bad, they got the number one pick again. Luck, ladies and gentlemen. And with that pick, they took Caleb Williams, quarterback of USC. The floor is yours, Moise, on Caleb Williams.
Yeah, what a special player. I have a few thoughts. I like to analyze everything in every single way, and I spend way too much time not just looking at football film. Like, it's especially now since, like, you know, I have more free time in a sense. But he's special. People have been talking, and, you know, analysts, you know, you get to see on TV every single day about not just the generational qualities, but, like, really putting him up there with, like, Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence. The last few quarterback classes that have had people where you're like, yeah, this is someone who could reset a franchise. Was phenomenal, started his career at Oklahoma. They had an NFL draft. They had a really, really good quarterback at that time who had a little bit of a reputation of being a jerk, but was, you know, and many people look at him as like first round intangibles. He just got drafted in the fifth round by the Saints. His name is Spencer Rattler. Caleb came in. First game against Texas, he was put in the game, engineered an incredible comeback. And when you think about that game, like every play he made, you're kind of like, man, this is the start of a story that's going to go on to include Super Bowls and MVPs. He transferred to the University of Southern California with his coach, Lincoln Riley, who's the reason he went to Oklahoma. 2 years ago, he won the Heisman Trophy Award and just one of the greatest seasons. Had USC on the verge of the playoffs. And then last year, he kind of regressed. But one thing the draft has shown, which a lot of people who were defending him had said, is that that team in USC, as much as that the allure of playing for the University of Southern California Trojans is there, that team didn't have a lot of talent. And if you look in this draft, I think his receivers went like the first receiver that went drafted from USC was like a sixth round pick. And then one was drafted in the seventh round, which I think was Brandon Rice, the son of Jerry Rice, and then a bunch of undrafteds. And then offensive line was atrocious, and he really tried to put a lot on his shoulders. The analysis on him, incredibly intelligent, great footwork, can throw in timing, can throw deep, can make any throw, can make throws that you can't dream of. Kind of the negative assessment on him last year was that he gave up, you know, quarterback plays that are singles, doubles, like things you should take, right? If you see the running back out in the flat that's open, hit him. 3-4 yards, let your players make plays. Like, he didn't take those plays as much to hit home runs. And then if you watch USC and you watch the games, you understand why. That defense couldn't stop anybody. And he was absolutely overwhelmed in terms of, like, playing some really good teams. You know, I really bemoaned the demise of the Pac-12. But the Pac-12 was awesome last year. They had Oregon. They had Washington. They had some great, even UCLA was really good, Oregon State, like they had a lot of great teams. And Caleb was facing teams that had multiple first rounders, second rounders drafted, and guys were going to go big next year. And so the regression naturally happened. He also lost Jordan Addison, who was a first round pick of the Minnesota Vikings last year, the wide receiver. But to the Bears, when they met him, the biggest red flags about him were, you know, his personality. There's a lot of criticisms of him. He paints his nails. He does this. He cries on the sidelines. It didn't bother Ryan Poles. And like the more Ryan Poles has been talking about him, I think he was on Waddle and Sylvie. He said they were big fans of him going in. And then when they had their first 2-3 sit downs, they were like, yeah, that's our guy. I think on Waddle and Sylvie, Poles had mentioned that really the decision was made on Justin at the end of the season. So they were always in on picking a quarterback in this draft, and that lines up with the comments they had made about wanting to reset the quarterback clock. So NFL contracts, how they work is if you land a quarterback in the draft who's really good compared to what quarterbacks get paid, veteran, like really elite quarterbacks, that salary cap is, you know, a fraction, having a rookie quarterback, which allows you then to spend on the team while this quarterback is developing, and hopefully hitting or ascending to their ceiling. So the Bears are set up in that way where they can keep adding pieces around him. And as a hater and someone really sad, he's walking into a far better situation than our previous quarterback. I don't need to name names, because if I do start naming names of who the previous quarterback had, you're going to be saying who? You'll have a bunch of tabs open trying to figure out who these players were. Caleb is a special quarterback. I think the Bears have set him up with an incredible receiving room, a great backfield. Some questions about that offensive line, but many, many NFL folks believe that if your quarterback is a multiplier, if he has a quick release, which he does, he processes fast, which he does, he has incredible talents and intangibles, which he does, that he can lift the play of people who might be weak just by getting the ball out quicker, just by, you know, analyzing the field quicker and getting in rhythm.
So he also has something that I've never seen or haven't seen in a Bears quarterback since, and this, I'm going to name a quarterback who was with the Bears before you were born, Jim McMahon. And that is like this swagger, confidence. And so Bears quarterbacks, it's a curious bunch. The last one, the aforementioned Justin Fields, whose face is adorning Moise's t-shirt. I love the guy, but he's of a school where you don't say much and you're humble. I'm just telling you how he went about business. And then Jay Cutler, who is the quote unquote great quarterback, probably the greatest. This is how pathetic it is to be a Bears fan. I would argue he's the greatest quarterback the Bears have had in my lifetime. I'm not old enough to remember to have been around for Sid Luckman. So I say Jay Cutler was the greatest quarterback just in terms of overall skills. But God, what a rancid personality that guy was. Nobody liked him. The man had that swagger. Everybody, it seemed like people played harder for him. And his problem was he was always getting injured. And that's who Caleb Williams reminds me of. He's confident. He's like, yeah, I embrace the pressure. Bring it on. I'm not afraid. And, you know, Moise, if you watch that basketball game last night, there's some players that it was the Knicks-Sixers basketball game I'm alluding to. Some players like Jalen Brunson embraced the pressure. They wanted to take the shot. And other players are like, don't give me the ball. I don't want to take the shot. And they were on the Sixers by and large. So your thoughts on Caleb Williams' personality and how unique it is for the Bears. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think they're like, I'm a Bears fan, but this year, and Ben hates this. He always hates when I say like, hey, I love sports. I'm watching everybody. Because if I tell Ben in basketball, like, man, you got to appreciate Jalen Brunson. Ben's hate just, you're not a Bulls fan. You're not lefty. You're not this. You're not that. You know, all this stuff. Like, and, you know, if I say something like, man, you know, that, like, I'll just name a player, right? Man, that Jokic dude, he's so fun to watch. Ben's like, what do you think about Vucevic? I'm like, okay, man. Like, it doesn't always have to come back this way. Just because there's some syllable symmetry in their names, I don't have to compare them. But yeah, Ben's a hater. But you know what? I'm definitely gonna be paying attention to San Diego because I love Harbaugh. You know, and I'm gonna love watching them run the ball. Definitely gonna be watching Pittsburgh a lot too because Justin's there. But in regards to Caleb Williams, you know, I'm a Bears fan, and he said some stuff these last few days where you're like, oh yeah, man, where have you been? Right. I think he delivered this killer line. And I want to talk a little bit about this because, like, I also am, like, really getting annoyed of Chicago sports media and, like, all the folks who are, like, you know, it's like I'm sorry, man. Like, the reason why I love Justin, and Ben knows this, and I talked about this in the last podcast, how can you not love somebody who just put it out there for you, took beating after beating? And you're right. Justin is very mild-mannered, but, like, everything you hear about him in the locker room from high school, from Ohio State, from Georgia, Ohio State, to the Bears, like, his teammates love him. Like, he's, like, the consummate teammate, working out hard, working late, accountable, every single thing. And it's not as demonstrative as people want. I also hate this rah-rah culture. Like, I remember having to defend Jay Cutler a lot because everybody was, you know, NFL media used to be like, there's Drew Brees, you need a leader. And it's like, shut up, dude. Drew Brees is annoying as hell. And I love Cutler because you know where Cutler's leadership shined? His toughness. That guy took beatings. And again, the same MO in what seems to be what Ryan Poles is trying to exercise the demons of is that you don't throw a quarterback in this game without having a good supporting cast. And Jay Cutler, when Devin Hester was your number one receiver, come on, man. I love Hester, but like, what is Devin Hester's route tree, right? When your offensive line consists of dudes who are fifth, sixth, seventh round picks, UDFAs, you're going to get your quarterback killed. When you have musical chairs with your offensive coordinators, you're going to just destroy a guy's development. And, you know, we saw that with Justin too, right? Like, so I'm hoping that no one, you know, no young person, because I'm a firm, at the end of the day, these are young men who are playing this game. And like, if you're a public school teacher, you're always rooting for young people, that they get it, that they get to a point just like I want for kids in my classroom to always reach their potential. I want someone like him who's worked hard his entire life to get to this point to reach his potential in our city. But like, I will say there's been some things he said where you're like, damn, you understand it, right? You really get it. The quote was, I pulled it up. They asked him about the enormous expectations of him in the NFL and the team. And he's like, what's the reason to duck? It's here. There's no reason to duck. I'm here. Rome's here. Keenan's here. Top five defense that we had last year. Special teams. All the new roles. Whatever. We're here. I'm excited. I know everybody's excited. The Bears fans are excited from what I've heard and seen. There's no reason to duck. Attack it head first and go get it. Oh. 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 And in a city where we had a sociopath playing basketball for us that were number 23, where he would just make things up in his head to dominate you, Williams has that, man. He's on Twitter pulling up comments of every negative thing people have said. Also, like, another thing, you know, I was listening to Holmes and Bernstein like a couple of days ago, and they turned this into this really sentimental like riff on like, oh, you know, COVID students and like confidence and like this and that. And it was tied to like, you know, like kind of the rehabbing that Chicago media is doing of Caleb's personality, because, you know, I think people were throwing all that misinformation and red flags about him, this and that, that and this, because people didn't want the Bears to draft him because they wanted their teams to get this guy, right? Yeah. But, like, I want to say this. One thing that's really missed about the NIL generation, and Williams was, like, the highest-paid NIL player ever, according to Ryan Poles, is that with that comes coaches. With that comes your media team. With that comes professionals who are going to curate an image that we want to see. I don't, you know, I at the end of the day, it's all about football, right? We all love the commentary. We love this. We love that. And, you know, we love Jordan being a sociopath. But imagine if, like, I don't know, Nikola Vucevic was saying, like, yeah, making up enemies in his head. But obviously he's not Jordan. We'd be like, okay, we gotta release this guy. He's lost his mind. Or, like, what Patrick Beverley is going through, where people are like, you really want this guy, right? There's a certain type of leeway and attitude, right? Like, we talked about this a lot, the parasocial relationship people think they have with Jordan, that they allow him to be an absolute jerk to the extent that fans thinking Michael would appreciate them booing the widow of Jerry Krause, right? It's all about on the field. Right now, we're enjoying it, right? Right now, you can say all the right things. But being a fan in the city, oof, people will turn on you quick if the results aren't there. They will defend you like crazy. We defended Jay Cutler even though we were like, man, he's not going to be that good because team's not that good. But people in this city were ready to fight you if you said anything negative about Jay Cutler. So I think Caleb has everything you want in terms of folks who don't shy away from the big moment. That guy has wanted it. And his comments, I would really encourage people to, if they're really interested in him, there's a podcast called The Pivot with Ryan Clark that Caleb was on, where you really got to see him be very like football sincere, right? Where he was just like talking about how he didn't want to sit on the bench, even though Rattler was like such a good quarterback ahead of him. Like, this guy is a gamer. He's a competitor. He cares. He wants to win. And those comments where he's like, there's no ducking, he means that. And this is a guy who's right now probably in his head just, you know, he's ready. He wants to have like a record-shattering season. And that's something to get excited about. In this, and, you know, you can always look at the dialectics of someone being coached up to say these things. Like, I'm arguing that he's very good at curating this image because he has a team. But in the same capacity, everything people have talked about from him, from high school to Oklahoma to USC to now, that guy is not afraid of the big moments, and he wants to be special. He wants to be up there, you know? And you need that type of arrogance, or you need that level of, like, chest out in some of the elite athletes, as we witnessed with Michael Jordan in the city. You need someone like that. You need a smack talker like McMahon. Even if they're not elite, you need someone like McMahon to lead a team like the 85 Bears, because you need that confidence to just shine throughout so other teams know that they're going to be in a dogfight every single game.
Yeah. No, that was a good riff. So, yes, the psychopath that Moise was alluding to, of course, is Michael Jeffrey Jordan, who I'll just put it this way, was a complete jerk off the court. Well, probably on the court, too. But he's the greatest. And he single-handedly approached, follow me in this one, Moise, because you were only three, I think, at the time. But there was a psyche that Chicago sports fans in general, Bulls fans in particular, had in 1989, and that is the Bulls will always lose. Push come to shove, you get to the big moment, and they will lose. They will find some way, somehow, to lose. And fans internalize that. The most obvious case of the Chicago Cubs fans, who are so obnoxious, they've internalized it so much. So they just expect to lose, and they have this moment of dread as the game gets closer to the end. How is our team going to lose? And they get bitter and they and angry, and they take it out on their wives and loved ones, et cetera, and so forth. And then in 1989, the Bulls were down by 1 point with a few seconds left against Cleveland, and the winner take all game. And Jordan took the shot and hit the shot. If he missed the shot, the Bulls season would have ended, because he hit the shot. They went on. And just like that, he just confronted that loser mentality. And Bulls fans revered him from, I mean, they already revered him, but from that way on, no matter what he said, no matter what he did. So he had a fight with Jerry Krause. You're right. Most Bulls fans just wanted to hate on Jerry Krause because Jordan did. They thought like Jordan would like them if they hated on him. So now they're still doing it. Man, do you think that Caleb Williams has that kind of guts in him? You know what I'm saying, Moise? Do you think he's got that ability to rise to that moment and come through? I don't know. I watched him at USC. It's hard for me to make that kind of judgment. What's your thoughts?
Yeah. No, it's a great question. I think one of the things that I wish we got to see Caleb Williams in was like better situations. I have a lot of feelings about Lincoln Riley. You can't argue that the head coach of USC, former head coach of Oklahoma, Lincoln Riley, doesn't have an impressive track record developing quarterbacks, right? If we name the quarterbacks that have been in his system that have gotten to the NFL, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Jalen Hurts. Those are quality quarterbacks, right? Like, Kyler's had some great years. Baker was the number one pick. He had a great bounce back here for Tampa. He was doing really well in Cleveland, and then things started shifting beyond his control. He has a ceiling, of course, but still, I mean, it's hard to be a successful quarterback in the NFL, and Baker's doing it. Jalen Hurts, has been a MVP candidate. Philadelphia had an off year, but has been to the Super Bowl. Lincoln Riley can produce quarterbacks. But I do think one of the struggles is that I would have loved to see Caleb Williams in the big stage a bit more, right? I would have loved to see him in the playoffs. Imagine, how Caleb would look or how you would respond to the situation if he was a quarterback at Ohio State, at Alabama, at Georgia, at Washington. You know, stages where we got to see guys like McCarthy, Penix, and I'm not in any capacity. Please, anybody listening to this, do not lump me in with the weirdos who think J.J. McCarthy was, you know, arguably the best quarterback in this draft. Like, please stop. But like, that's the tough part of when you were assessing someone like Caleb Williams, and like the fact that these, you know, people want, believe this guy could be the greatest quarterback of all time, right? Or at least one of the greats. The fact that he admires Aaron Rodgers, and the fact that people who are not, not to be negative, people who aren't that, not that keen as observers of football keep making the Mahomes conversation. He's way more like, plays way more like Rodgers. Rodgers is his favorite player than Mahomes, but there are some, you know, insane plays where you're like, man, Patrick Mahomes can do that, so can he. I think we're going to see, right? Like, those are the things as a fan that all of it is just projection. All of it is just, you know, us sitting around, because football is all consuming, right? Like, everybody, like, right now, I'm just like, let's go, man. Can I get the season going? And then my brother's friend was like, you're not a real football fan. I want to watch pre-mini camp. I want to see what undrafted free agents make the team. And I'm just like, yeah, but you know what? Like, as much as I'm saying I want to skip to the season, I'm going to watch all that pageantry. So it becomes this fodder that we're all going to be discussing, like, can he, or can he not? But we're going to have to see it, right? Because unfortunately, we did not see Caleb Williams in the playoffs. We saw him as a freshman jump into the Red River Shootout, the rivalry between Texas and Oklahoma, which is one of the greatest rivalries, one of the biggest stages, storm back with Oklahoma and do some damage in a game where they were down 28-7. But in between that, we haven't seen, the Rose Bowl games, the playoff games, the games that you're like, you know, dang, this is elite moments against elite competition, right? And not to say he hasn't cut up some elite teams with less than elite talent. Like, the guy can ball. But there are these, you know, like, if you're watching, like, you know, a movie from back in the day and there's always like, oh, this frame is missing, there are some moments where he's going to have to write his legacy in the NFL. And the Bears are doing their best to give him that space, right? Give him a team where we see him against Green Bay at the end of the year in a meaningful game. And let's see what you got, kid. Or we see him in the playoffs, right? The upstart Chicago Bears going to Philadelphia, going to San Francisco in the first round, where we're going to be like, let's see what you got, kid, right? And the thing is, the imagination right now, I think my imagination is at a level where I don't think I could have, you know, imagined this type of stuff coming from a player in previous years, one, because of who the player is, and two, because last year I saw C.J. Stroud change the entire trajectory of an organization that was floundering. And you're hoping for the same here. And you're hoping, and it's such a bigger deal here because you know what, how many demons he has to exercise? He has to not only win in Chicago, a city that is used to mediocrity. He has to beat Green Bay. He has to beat a Detroit team that in itself thinks they're in a title window. He has to beat a 49ers team that believes that they deserve a title soon, that wants to win a title, that's been to the Super Bowl twice under their head coach, Kyle Shanahan. And then if he gets to the mountain, like, I'm jumping way ahead of myself, more than likely there's a gentleman named Patrick Mahomes waiting for him over there. And that's a story we're going to be really, really excited to watch for the next few years.
Yeah, and he'll be doing that as a rookie.
Yeah.
It's part of me wants to go, oh, temper your enthusiasm. Patrick Mahomes barely even played his rookie year. Temper your enthusiasm.
I blame C.J. Stroud. I don't want to temper my enthusiasm anymore.
Why? Why should I? Why should I temper my nothing, I always say this, nothing I say or do will have any impact on how the Bears do next year. So it's like watching a game with someone and a guy's at the free throw line and the announcer says, he's a 95% free throw shooter. He can't miss. And the guy misses. So my friend, that's where he jinxed him. I'm going, no. What that announcer said had no bearing whatsoever. you can't argue with a sports fan, like I said.
Just, or my brother getting mad if I switch seats during the game. And he's like, look at that. We went on a 10-0 run because of you, idiot. And I'm like, excuse me? I just wanted some water.
Well, you know, this is true. Wait, let me just say this. Last night, watching Knicks, Sixers, and Tyrese Maxey only had 5 points going into the fourth quarter for the Sixers. And so I texted my good friend Uduak, and I'm like, Maxey's scared. It's the biggest stage, and he's scared. The guy ran off like 12 points in a row. I'm like, ooh. It was me texting him, Moise, that altered it, okay? He got mad at me for saying he was scared. That's how weird sports fans are, by the way. And you guys, sports writers, you're the same way. You just get paid for it, so you think you're not a sports fan. You're just as weird as every sports fan. All right, enough of that. All right, I got to ask you about this. We'll close with the Justin Fields question. The Bears drafted a punter in the fourth round. I happen to know this. The last time in my mind, the Bears made a significant draft of a punter was in, I think it was 2001 or 2000, when they took a punter in the fifth or sixth round over Tom Brady. Okay. Bears, they could have had Brady. I kind of like it taking a punter. I went with my buddy Ivan. Shout out, Ivan. We went to the Northwestern Iowa game this year at Wrigley Field. It was a blast. Moise, you got to go to one of those Wrigley Field games. And this two inept offenses that day, Northwestern's versus Iowa, meant that the poor Iowa punter was on the field constantly. And he was booming these kicks. I'm like, I was telling Ivan, God damn, this is a good punter. And the Bears got him. So your thoughts on the Bears drafting a punter in the fourth round? Go ahead, Moise.
Yeah, I'm going to be a nerd for a second. Also, I really got to catch a Northwestern game next year because they made one of the most subtle, but if you're a nerd about it, they made one of the most subtle hirings. But if you're a nerd, you get excited. They hired Zach Lujan to be their offensive coordinator. Oh, my God. That guy is an offensive mastermind. I was combing through his stuff. I'm going to comb through it over the summer to see how we can install some of the concepts in our flag team. But they got the best offensive coordinator in Division II, and I'm talking like that guy is innovative. So Northwestern's offense might be something else this year. So I got to go check out some games before they start lighting it up, hopefully, and people are like, let's go see Northwestern, man. Torrey Taylor, the Aussie punter. I think I mentioned this earlier. That screams of an arrogant pick. Like, that's the type of pick you make when you're like, we're a title team. We're one player away, right? Let's go get this guy. But the hype is real about him, right? There's two things that – one, you have to give Ryan Poles credit. This was one of those drafts that, Dane Brugler, like the guys I love watching the draft about, like the guys who talk the draft, and I'm like, Bob, I'm so interested. Dane Brugler writes this comprehensive PDF called Beast where he talks about every single prospect in the draft. It's massive. He had this analysis along with a lot of other people saying that this draft falls off of a cliff around the fourth round, mainly because the COVID exception is in its final year next year. So a lot of players are going to take advantage of it. So the traditional depth you would see is gone because players are going to jostle to get their stock higher next year. Next year's draft is supposed to be deeper. It won't have the quarterbacks at this level. It won't have the receivers at this level for now because, you never know. Like, certain players come out of nowhere, right? But it's supposed to be a deeper draft. This draft did have some deep depth to it when it came to like offensive linemen, when it came to receivers. So when Ryan Poles made that pick in the fourth round, it's you have to kind of give him some credit because you're like, okay, this is a draft that falls off a cliff around here, and then you picked a punter who is exceptional, right? Like Iowa was a really bad offensive team, really bad. Really bad. They had a good defense. They had a great defense. And that punter that they had was a weapon. He is like, there's something about when he punts that it's like he almost punts a magnet into the football that they pin it down in the 10-yard territory of the opposing team. So when you get the ball back after Iowa would punt, you more than likely would have the worst field position. You would be backed up against the end zone where we all know, right? Like one bad handoff, one mistimed play, anything could lead to a pick six or turning the ball over and giving the offense a ball there. Or at the minimum, if you get stopped three times and then your team has to punt, they're probably punting out of their end zone, which guarantees the other team great field position. And if you have an elite offense, if you got the number one overall pick, a generational quarterback, you got DJ Moore, you got Keenan Allen, two dudes who are elite receivers, and then Rome Odunze, and then Cole Kmet, who is top seven amongst tight ends, Gerald Everett, who's like a great move tight end, DeAndre Swift, Khalil Herbert, Roschon Johnson. You want field position on your 50. You want the other team pinned back, especially if you got a top 10 defense like the Bears do. So it's not I would say something that we can analyze and say, wow, what a terrible pick. It is one of those, like, you know, the GM is on a hot streak. He's filling himself type of picks where he's like, you know, we're just a punter away from being a contender. And then getting this guy, but one, he's good. He's really good. He's very good. And two, like, I think he was also in the Heisman vote, which drives me crazy because I want to see a punter win a Heisman in my lifetime. It won't happen. But it'd be great. But two, you want that, right? The way this team is kind of built, you want a punter who can boot this. And Trenton Gill, who was drafted by Poles 2 years ago, great guy. Like, Bears special teams always used to have this, like, funny content online. Not to be, like, you know, pretend that I know the guy, maybe my own weird parasocial self. But he was a good guy, but he wasn't a great punter. Now you have an elite, right? So I think the Bears did it at the right time. I look forward to, probably in a few years talking about how the Bears didn't draft Michael Pratt, who's a quarterback that Green Bay drafted, who at 5 years from now will be the next Tom Brady, because that's how life works, right? And then we could criticize the Bears then. But for now, good pick.
Well, yeah. So let's just like we can criticize the Bulls, because in 2018, they did not take Jalen Brunson. He was the 33rd pick. All right, ladies and gentlemen, 33rd pick. And he's perhaps the best clutch player in the NBA today. Absolutely. I think he's just, if on the money on the line, it's Jalen Brunson.
Yeah.
See,
you can say this now, because if I said this to Ben in a text, listeners, Ben would be like, what about Alex Caruso, huh? And then he'd call me there for like 20 minutes.
That's like, you know what? I allow my guests to say absolutely anything. And that's
very so different Ben Jarofsky when we're on the mic, huh?
I'll let that one stand. All right, we'll close with Justin Fields. You're wearing his T-shirt. The Pittsburgh, I was saying, please keep him, please keep him, please keep him. And now I'm sort of thinking, maybe we're better off not having kept him. Maybe Ryan Poles knows more than some lefty podcaster broadcasting out of his attic. So, yes. I must concede that point. Pittsburgh, I noted, did not pick up his option. So essentially, this is a tryout year for him with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And now, as I said at the outset, the talk in Pittsburgh is they're not even going to concentrate on him at quarterback. They're thinking him as a kickoff returner or maybe a punt returner. So have you changed your attitude about Justin Fields, Moise?
Absolutely not. I will forever love Justin Fields, and I will be forever rooting for Justin Fields. And every memory he gave me as a Bears fan will always be meaningful for me. They did decline his option. I think for them, they're trying to figure themselves out, and it is what it is, right? One, Pittsburgh had an incredible draft. They drafted an offensive guard from Washington who was fantastic, who's a guy I loved if the Bears were to drop down. Then they drafted the consensus number one center in the draft, Zach Frazier from West Virginia, who's fantastic. They're building a hell of an offensive line. And I'm a firm believer, again, you and I are both just fans. We're not. But I will say this. I would hire Ben Jarofsky as my GM any day of the week. Any day of the week. And then I would have him meet with Brandon Johnson to hopefully get me a stadium built in the city of Chicago so I could just rip off him. Ben's a charmer. He would get it done. But Ben, I would hire you in a heartbeat, man. You and me working in a front office team would be like the greatest time ever. But Pittsburgh had a phenomenal draft. They're building an incredibly good offensive line. And someone like me, who is just a, you know, just a dude, a public school teacher and a fan, I'm a firm believer, like many people, you build in the trenches, right? Your offensive line and your defensive line can dictate it. Harbaugh had this amazing interview where he's like, people talk about offensive linemen as not being weapons. That's the tip of the spear. And he gave this great interview, and you should definitely check it out, where he explained how the offensive line makes the difference, you know? And even Caleb was like, kind of like, man, lobbying a little bit to get his buddy Olu Fashunu drafted, who's offensive tackle taken by the Saints. They went to high school together, great player out of Penn State. Pittsburgh had a good draft. And I think Justin is going to be set up there to succeed. I think Arthur Smith, who runs a heavy play action offense, who's very good at getting the quarterback on the move, who revived the career of Ryan Tannehill, is the ideal guy for Justin. But Justin has to beat out Russell Wilson, of course, over there, who is in his own attempts to revive his career. And by all means, outside of this, you know, the years in Denver, was a phenomenal quarterback, like a really good quarterback. The kick returner, punt returner stuff, that's their running back who kind of made a joke. Their special teams coach is very unorthodox, and the NFL has changed their kick return rules where, like, if you got a running back there, an athlete, like, nothing happens until the returner touches the ball now, which is my simple way of explaining it. I think he meant it as a joke. You're not going to put Justin Fields back there, and I think Justin Fields would be like, yeah, I didn't sign up for this. You're not going to get a quarterback. You're not going to leave them open to be like hit, even though they're incredible athletes. It has been like a really fun moment for the extremely cruel part of our fan base that believes part of moving on is also, you know, degrading the guy that left, which is so odd for me because like the Bears have been so great and their fans have been so great these last few years, honoring guys like Julius Peppers who went to Green Bay. Or like Khalil Mack, like this franchise has always been deeply sentimental to me. Like players leave, like we love Greg Olsen, even though he left. Like we love dudes, even though they left because they gave something to us, right? Unless they were terrible to us. But like a lot of the cruel part of our fan base has been like, told you he wasn't QB1, he's kick returner one. And I'm like, okay, they're not going to put him out there to return kicks. Also, Justin's a competitor. I wish Russell Wilson the best because, you know, Justin's going to come out strong. You know, I have like an Instagram account that I keep mainly to, you know, see the content around like drills that people do for coaching and like some great coaches are on there. But I've been following Justin's Instagram and he's grinding, right? He's been working out nonstop. He's doing some great things. Ideally for me, he wins it in preseason. Pittsburgh has a great year. And then, you know, we see this young man that we deeply cared about ascend to the player he should have always been for us. And, you know, you hope the same for Caleb. I think as I'm getting older as a sports fan, I'm not like how I was when I was younger where, like, you know, I was rooting for people to fail. Like, I'm rooting for certain players who are just assholes, right, to fail. Like, yeah. I will never take back, you know, the negative things I said about Carl Malone because he's awful. So, like, screw him. But like in the same capacity, anytime I watch the draft, I'm getting a little bit soft. I'm a public school teacher. I'm getting older. I'm a coach. I'm just like, go, man. Go be great. Right? Go be great.
I'm with you. There's so many ex-Bulls around the league. So I'm watching a game with a friend. That guy used to play in the
Derek
Bulls.
Jones,
that guy used to play
in Dallas. I was rooting for him.
I love him. And, Daniel Gafford, they have two on Dallas. I could do every Bull still in the playoffs. None of them on the current Bulls, by the way. None of my current Bulls are in the playoffs because the Bulls are not in the playoffs. That's a whole other story. All right, we have reached the end of this segment. Muiz, thank you very much. We'll probably bring you back. Oh, I don't know. What's the next big thing? I guess the start of you know what? I may bring you back for some basketball. Then you can hear him. Oh, my God. Then you'll hear the stuff he says about basketball, ladies and gentlemen. And he can explain his bizarre love for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
This is slander, Ben Johnson. This is slander. Like, I'm gonna ask Nate.
Remember last year was the Phoenix Suns. I remember getting tired of the Phoenix Suns.
Where I was like, I'm like, let's go Suns. And Ben's like, wow, you're a traitor, this, that. Like, you know, like Ben is so territorial about the Bulls. Like, I'm sorry, Ben, put a good product out there. And I won't say anything negative.
Oh, Lord. I can't really rebut
that. I bet
that
you
one.
Want Durant. What if they trade for Durant tomorrow? Ben's like, you know, that Durant guy loved him forever.
Oh, come on. They trade for Durant tomorrow? Yes, sir. I want Kevin Durant on the ball. Listen, man, the Lakers just fired their head coach. Come on, AD. Come on home. I'll take you.
I thought you were going to say that you wanted Darvin Ham. I'm like, what's wrong with you, man? You're like, come on, bring it on.
I like Darvin Ham. I like Darvin Ham. I thought okay, we were at the end of the segment. We'll do a whole show on how coaches are vilified and unfairly, just the whole attitude toward coaches. What Milwaukee Bucks have done with coaches this year is insane. But you know what? We're out of time. We'll tell you it for another time. Thank you very much, Moise. You're the man. We'll talk to you real soon. That's Moise Bawani. I'm Ben Drofsky. Take care, everybody.